Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Tom Fairbanks, who is engineering and producing our show. Together, a big welcome to the Buckmaster program as we wrap up the month of September. Thursday, the 30th of September, 2021. It also wraps up monsoon season 2021, Tom, and we're going to get the bronze medal. Third wettest monsoon season. Of course, if it had been up at my house where we had another half inch of rain last night, we certainly would have been going for the gold or had the gold.
But with bronze, we still get to stand on the awards stadium or the podium.
Yep. And so it's been a very productive summer thunderstorm season for sure. The Buckmaster Show will wrap up year 11 at the end of this year, and then we'll launch into year 12. And right here on the Green Things, in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, our radio station is 1030. It's KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we take the live feed from kvoi.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Speaking of the Live Line, let's go now to Prescott, Arizona, Pima County Supervisor representing District Number 1, Democrat on the board, the five-member board, Rex Scott. Supervisor Scott, I guess you are up at the, is it Cities and Counties annual meeting?
It's a very similar meeting, Bill, and thanks for the opportunity, by the way, to be with you and Tom and your listeners. I am at the annual meeting of the County Supervisors Association, along with my colleagues from the other 14 counties.
What is the message that came out of the meetings?
Well, we are meeting until tomorrow afternoon, but what we have been talking about this morning is our priorities for the coming legislative session. And one of the things that we spoke about a great deal this morning is the need for the legislature to look at raising, for the first time since 1990, 31 years, the gasoline tax. It is at 18 cents a gallon, which is the fifth lowest gas tax in the country. As I said, it hasn't been raised since 1990, and it is the main source of revenue, not only for cities and counties, but also for the state transportation department with regard to repair and maintenance of our roads. The State Department of Transportation is estimating they are going to need an additional $30.5 billion to meet all of their needs moving forward. And the counties, all told, not just Pima County, but the other 14, are going to need an additional $2.2 billion. And the main source of funds for all of us is the Highway User Revenue Fund. And besides the vehicle license tax, the gasoline tax is the biggest source of revenue for the Highway User Revenue Fund. So the County Supervisors Association is calling on the legislature to address that shortfall, not only to meet our needs, but to meet the needs of the entire state.
Supervisor Scott, I want to take a deep dive during our time today into this deteriorating relationship over two fundamental issues in Pima County. And it's a deteriorating relationship with the city and county. Some say it's at an all-time low over water and transportation. You are the Pima County representative on the Regional Transportation Board. There's been a lot written about it lately. Tim Steller, my friend at the Arizona Daily Star, had a good column in Wednesday's paper just yesterday about this ultimatum that has been issued by the city of Tucson. First of all, where are we right now? Where does this stand?
Well, Bill, first of all, I've been in either appointed or elected leadership positions since I was 24 years old. I'm now 58. And I don't make sweeping statements about relationships being at an all-time low. And I recognize that somebody who you may be throwing blows with one day, you're going to be walking arm in arm with the next. And I think the public expects the city and the county and all of the other jurisdictions to come together and find some practical means of moving forward with an RTA next plan. Because if we don't, the opportunities that we're going to miss out on, opportunities that we're taking advantage of currently, opportunities that we will be able to take advantage of for the period from 2026 to 2046 are going to be lost. And I actually feel that there's a tremendous basis and potential for compromise amongst the city, the county, and the other seven entities that are represented on the RTA board. And I feel very hopeful. And my commitment is going to be to work with all of my colleagues to compromise when that is reasonable, and to get an RTA next plan before the voters so that we do not miss out on all the opportunities the current and the future plan provide to them.
The city wants more representation on the RTA board. Let me ask you, is that possible under the way the law is currently written, or would the board have to go back to the legislature to change the representation weighting?
Well, the motion that Mayor and Council passed the week before last asked for not just proportional representation, but veto power on not just the RTA board, but also with anything with regard to RTA Next and also on the PAG Regional Council. Now, I have asked the attorney who represents the RTA board to make a presentation at our October meeting about precisely what the statutes call for in terms of changing voting representation on the RTA board. As was pointed out at the last meeting, the Regional Transportation Authority is a special taxing authority that is created by the state legislature. And my understanding is that for voting rights on the RTA board to be changed, it would require legislative action. But I'm going to ask our attorney to dig into the statutes and brief the board at our October meeting. I think that we have more latitude locally to make changes to the membership of the PAG Regional Council if we chose to do so. And I've already proposed, and I'm willing to circle back to this proposal again, geographic representation on the Citizens Advisory Committee that will craft the RTA next plan and present it to the board for our approval so we can send it to the voters. I've already proposed geographic representation on that committee that would give a majority to the city of Tucson, which is warranted given that they are anywhere, depending on who you ask, 52 to 55% of the county's population.
Your colleague, Dr. Matt Hines, Pima County Supervisor, Democrat District 2 on the five-member Pima County Board, was my guest on Monday. And Dr. Hines has come up with what he sees as a compromise, which would give Tucson 3 votes, Pima County 2 votes, and the rest of the members on the board 1 vote each. What do you think of that kind of a 12-member board? Is that doable?
Well, Dr. Hines's proposal addresses the PAG Regional Council. It does not address the RTA board.
Hmm. Okay. So what's the bottom line here? Is this doable, compromise?
It is. It is, Bill. The bottom line is this. If we are going to demonstrate to the voters as their leaders that we believe in the potential and opportunity of both the current and future RTA plan, and if we're going to demonstrate to the people that we represent that we are able to engage in practical compromise so that we can move forward with finishing out the current plan that ends in 2026 and getting a new plan before them that will cover the 20-year period from 2026 to 2046, of course it's doable. And there were a lot of people at our last meeting, including the mayor of Tucson, who said that we need to commit to ongoing dialogue with each other with the end goal of coming up with an RTA next plan that we can put before the voters. So yes, compromise is not only possible, it is essential.
All right. We have Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott with us on the live line, calling us from Prescott, where he has been attending the annual meeting of the County Supervisors Association. Why don't we try to work a caller in here before we hear from Mona's Danish Bakery? Robert has called 790-2040 with a question for Supervisor Scott. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi, Rex. Just yes or no questions to begin with. The gas tax that we pay in Tucson goes to Phoenix, correct?
Yes.
And it's
because it is a
for
state
a
gas tax.
And
it's used, Robert,
used for highways.
It's used, Robert, to fund not only the transportation endeavors of cities and counties, but also the state transportation department.
So if we raise the gas tax 2 cents, we couldn't sweep that off and use it for roads in town?
There are existing formulas that are set up by state government in terms of how gas tax revenues are distributed to both cities and counties, as well as the state transportation department.
Well, without that, our roads are in town are goners. I mean, there is no solution. And I don't think 2 cents on a gas tax is asking too much. All you have to do is combine two trips one day of the week, and you can make that 2 cents right back up. So how would our roads, interior roads, get funded? Or are we just stuck with what we've got for eternity?
Well, beyond the fact that just like other cities and counties, we are reliant on highway user revenue funds, the county has also been committing local funds to a program called PAYGO that envisions getting all of the county roads, the ones in unincorporated Pima County that are our responsibility, up to good or fair condition by 2030. We've been able to infuse some additional funds this fiscal year, and we're looking at infusing some additional funds next fiscal year, and we think we're going to be able to achieve that goal earlier than 2030, perhaps as early as 2027 or 2028. But all cities and counties and the state of Arizona are very dependent on gas tax revenues. As you point out, that wouldn't be an onerous increase. We didn't talk about a specific increase at the County Supervisors Association today. We just talked about the fact that the legislature needs to look at that important revenue source, not only for state roads, but also for local roads in cities and counties throughout the state.
All right, Robert, thank you for some good points there. And Supervisor Scott, we're going to take a break right here. We will come back to you up in Prescott. But right now I want to tell everybody about my favorite bakery. It's Mona's Danish Bakery. Right about now, I think all of us could use a little comfort food. And Mona's is the comfort food central in Pima County. It's home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. They open at each morning, 6:30 for breakfast. Mona's DanishBakery.com. Check it out. I'm not quite sure what I would select today. If I was looking right now at that case, it'd be so full of goodies. I probably would go with a peanut butter cookie for my dessert today with lunch. But you'll have to make that decision when you go to Mona's to decide what you want to have. We'll take a break right here. We'll be back with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott from Prescott right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops,
craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition. We are in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, perfect time to go by Green Things. Might want to go by there before you do some of your weekend gardening and get ready for the fall planting season. This is a perfect time of year with all the beautiful rain and moisture that we have had. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Their 13-acre site has everything you need for your garden. Their website, greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business is Zocalo Village. That website, zocalovillage.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go back now on the live line to Prescott, Arizona, where Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, Democrat representing Supervisorial District Number 1, is attending the County Supervisors Association. A representative from each county in Arizona is on at the meeting. And as we determined and heard from you, Supervisor Scott, one of the items of business today was to move for the legislature in the upcoming session in 2022 to finally increase the gas tax, which has not been increased now in, about 30 years. That's amazing. It's been that long. All right. The RTA issue, we talked about that. You believe there's still room here for compromise with the city of Tucson. What about what about the water issue? Tomorrow, Tim Tomier will be here, the assistant city manager. He's also, of course, over Tucson Water. We'll be asking him about the differential water rate that the city is planning to go forward with for unincorporated Pima County. Is there room for compromise in that area, Supervisor Scott?
I'm always going to hold out hope for the potential for compromise on any issue, Bill, especially one that is of such great significance to people who live in unincorporated Pima County, people who are being asked to pay more for their water when they sometimes have been customers of Tucson Water for 30 or 40 years and have never been asked for that before, especially given the fact that the city conducted what we consider to be an inadequate cost of service study that we feel cherry-picked data from the study that justified the increase on residents of unincorporated Pima County, but ignored data that pointed to the fact that the differential water rates as proposed are just inequitable and unfair. So we're always going to hold out the possibility of compromise and finding some way to get justice for these ratepayers. But I believe that the county still has to pursue all other options, including possibly legal options.
Well, Mr. Huckleberry, the administrator of Pima County, has been moving forward in the preparation for what many believe will be imminent legal action. Do you think if that comes down, the county has pretty good standing in that regard, Supervisor Scott?
We definitely believe we do. We removed attorney-client privilege from an opinion that we got from the Pima County Attorney's Office that spoke to not only the county's standing as a plaintiff in any pending legal action, but also several areas of where we would have grounds for moving forward with legal action. And by the way, anybody who wants to see that legal opinion just has to call the clerk of the board's office, and their staff will be happy to provide you with a copy of that opinion from the Pima County attorney. But yes, we feel if we went that route that we would have a great opportunity for success. And it also, the opinion also addresses the potential for class action suits by other affected ratepayers. And it's important to point out the county has standing because we are a ratepayer of Tucson Water within the unincorporated area.
Is historic precedent a part of this possible legal action that dates back to the early 1970s?
I believe it is when you have been functioning as the regional water provider. You can say that you're not, but when you have been essentially functioning as the regional water provider, especially in terms of the water service area that you delineated in order to get 85% of our region's allocation of Central Arizona Project water, yes, I think history and the actions of the city dating back, as you said, to the late 1970s certainly would be relevant in any kind of action.
I've only got a minute or two left. These COVID case numbers, I believe, are still far too high. I've been monitoring that, as many people do, the daily numbers from the Arizona Department of Health. They're usually around between 200 and 300 cases. It seems like we've kind of plateaued at a higher level than where we should be. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely would agree with that. And across the country, not just in Pima County and Arizona, the vast majority, I think it's well over 95% of people who are being infected, and certainly people who are being hospitalized or sadly losing their lives, are unvaccinated. So the main message still has to be get vaccinated. and get it done, not just for yourself, but for your entire community, because we are seeing, thank God this hasn't happened locally, but we're seeing in states like Alaska and Idaho, hospitals having to go on crisis standards of care, where if you're in a car accident or have some kind of cardiac episode, you might not get the care that you normally do because the hospital is dealing with so many COVID patients. So the message of get vaccinated is not just to protect yourself, but it's also to protect your entire community.
In the remaining few seconds, so what is the next RTA? What's the next step in this dust up?
We have to continue the discussion, Bill, about how we can move forward with the completion of this plan and getting a new plan in front of the voters. And again, that requires all the members of the RTA board, all nine of us, to commit to dialogue and commit to the possibility of compromise where that is necessary, because we cannot miss out on this opportunity. And I truly believe that all of my colleagues recognize the necessity of ongoing dialogue and compromise to move forward.
All right. Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, have a safe journey back to Tucson. Thank you for the time.
Bill, thank you very much. Appreciate you and Tom giving me this opportunity to be with you and your listeners.
All right. We'll take a break right here. It's Buckmaster, the midway point of our Thursday program, CBS Network News, right now.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The giant saguaro is the iconic symbol of the Sonoran Desert. We live among these sentinels that are really a biological oddity, but so much a part of our daily landscape. Now a new book unveils new views and understanding of the saguaro's ties to our history here in Tucson and Arizona and the Southwest. The book is titled In the Arms of Saguaros, Iconography of the Giant Cactus by Dr. William Lawrence Larry Bird, Jr., Curator Emeritus in the Division of Political History at the Smithsonian Institution. The book is published by the University of Arizona's Desert Laboratory at Tumamoc Hill and edited by Ben Wilder, the Desert Lab's director. Joining me in studio, Dr. Larry Bird, who first lived in Tucson in the mid-1970s. As a graduate student at the University of Arizona, where he received his master's in American history before going on to Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. for his doctorate and then a long career at the Smithsonian. Dr. Bird, thank you very much. Larry.
Thanks, Bill.
That's interesting about Larry. I'm sure you hear it all the time. Are you related to the basketball player? So get that. I'll get that.
Sorry.
I'll get that out of the way. So how does it feel to be back in Tucson and living here now full time?
Well, it's really wonderful to be back, among this wonderful botanical landscape that we live in. I drove out to the Desert Museum the other day to take a book to somebody, and it was early in the morning. I was driving through butterflies, with the monsoon. It's just incredible to be back here.
A year ago, the saguaros, I know on our property, they were looking pretty darn sad. And then we get a monumental, almost of historic proportion, rain here this summer. And now the saguaros have never looked better. I look out on a giant saguaro every morning from my bathroom, and it's fat and sassy and saying, Bill, I've got another maybe 200 years to live. And it certainly is so much that plant is so much a part of our life. And it almost becomes, when we've lived here a long time, an unconscious part of our environment.
Yeah, well, that to me, as a first-time visitor when I came out here for a graduate education, that was what struck me. I wasn't expecting that. And I lived here for almost a whole year before I realized, like, these things flower.
Yeah.
You mean it gets more beautiful? I was just stunned at what I didn't know, what I thought I knew, but I didn't know. And I would think that that's maybe the experience of quite a few people, me, who come here for other reasons, and then they end up just staying because it's so spectacular.
When you put this together, this book about the saguaro, I'm kind of surprised nobody had tackled this field really before, because it is such an icon. But how did you come about putting all of this together? How did you set it up?
Well, it's a matter of finding images, first of all, and then there's the history, and then, more to your question, there's the method. Mm-hmm. I mean, the images start out being just simple line drawings, and they become engravings and lithographs, and they're published in government survey reports. And this continues all the way down through photography to the glossy images of the travel and tourism industry that we're all familiar with today. But the third element after the history and the literal finding of images is the method, which is from the object out. It's kind of like a museum exhibit where you don't really begin writing until you've gathered the things, I mean, there's no writing without something that's interesting to look at, something that grabs your eye and pulls you in. And that's really where it starts.
What were the first images of the saguaro? You said they were line drawings. What, historically, they go back to when?
Well, it would be in the 1840s, the late 1840s, with the first government survey parties that came west through the Gila River Valley. And
was that the Bartlett expedition? Or
That was before Bartlett. Bartlett was 1852, 54. Okay. This was Emery, William Emery, mm-hmm. 1848. And he, in a letter to a botanist, George Engelman, sketched the outline of a saguaro, which, I mean, if you had to do that today to show something, that's pretty much, he did a pretty good job. Uh-huh. You know, he admitted, though, that he did not remember, could not remember if it had spines or not. But anyway, but that is the first image that I found and I use as a reference point. But this was turned into engravings and lithographs in these survey party reports, and they ended up always incorporating a human figure, which was sort of diminutive in scale in terms of the majesty of the plant, which made the plant seem just way larger than it possibly could be.
Way out of proportion.
Yeah. And I always thought that was kind of odd. And it really didn't matter because few people at the time had seen one, mm-hmm. a saguaro. Mm-hmm. But it just served a certain, you know, need to dramatize this as a botanical, as a scientific discovery, this massive, massive plants.
And then to show the saguaro to these exhibitions that started to be, very popular at the end of the 1800s and into the 1900s, they would have to take specimens back to places where obviously a saguaro is not going to do real well.
Right.
Like Buffalo, New York, or somewhere like that.
Well, this is
hopefully
sort of where
not in the winter when they.
Well, this contributes the pattern of attempting to transplant saguaros.
Right.
Begins when the railroad arrives at Tucson in 1880, and it comes from California. And almost the first return trip, there are plants going back. You know, courtesy of the Southern Pacific Railroad, they're building a hotel on the Monterey Peninsula, the Hotel Del Monte, and they have an Arizona garden as an attraction at the hotel that has saguaros mm-hmm. on the Monterey coast.
Wow.
And
that didn't last long, I bet.
Well, you can see the props that are, you know, bracing the plants.
Yeah.
And then pretty soon the saguaros just disappear and it's mm-hmm. just, you know, prickly pears and agaves. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But there is a certain conceit that anything can grow in California. I mean, even though it doesn't or can't. But they persisted nonetheless in taking these to world's fairs. There was one massive arm plant that they exhibited again, courtesy of railroad transportation in 1893 in Chicago. And they put it outside the horticulture building, and you see people passing by it, and it's just a stunning, stunning photograph in Chicago.
Yeah.
And then, of course, after the fair, these things would have been lucky to find their way to the early botanical gardens in Chicago, Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. New York, St. Louis.
Are there saguaros in botanical gardens outside of Arizona that you know of?
Yes, they're
that are actually alive and well.
Yeah, but they're typically not the armed. They're younger.
Okay.
So they're columnar, is what uh-huh. you might say, and they're typically 6 feet, mm-hmm. you know, and under, which counts as a specimen. I mean, they're not going to flower,
right?
But there were examples that they did transplant that were large and did flower in New York, you know, after the turn of the century. So
it can be done.
It can be done.
But when you try to transplant them even locally, it's a difficult situation.
The smaller, the better.
Yeah. All right. Dr. Larry Bird sticks around with us. We'll take a break right here. When we come back, we'll talk about some of these images specifically. When Life Magazine did a photo shoot out in the Sonoran Desert, and it's really some great pictures and some images from the book In the Arms of Saguaros. The author is with us in studio, Dr. Larry Bird. Be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners over to that area, and these are people that have lived here, many of them all their lives in Southern Arizona. They've never been to Silver City. They go over there and they have a great time. And if you're headed over there this weekend, oh, perfect weather in the land of enchantment. It's 51 degrees. Midday over in Silver City, that 6,000 to 7,000 foot elevation makes perfect autumn weather. They've got some great weather coming up this weekend in the low 70s. So a good time to pile in the car or the truck, take that 3-hour drive east of Tucson. So much to do, like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and visiting the world famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For more on things to do and great places to stay, visit their website, southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with our conversation with Dr. Larry Bird. His new book is titled In the Arms of Saguaros, and it is published by the University of Arizona's Desert Laboratory at Tumamoc Hill. Dr. Bird, who has really had a great career and he's still going strong. He's curator emeritus in the Division of Political History at the Smithsonian Institute. And Dr. Bird, we could spend the rest of the show talking about some of the great exhibits that you have curated and about your career. But I want to get back to the book. A lot of images in this book, maybe about 200, you would say. Probably the most famous image is the one I have turned open right in front of me. And this was a Life magazine spread that debuted in 1941. Describe for our listeners what that spread was about.
Well, it represents a conscious change in advertising strategy that was adopted by the Sunshine Climate Club, which was a Tucson booster group.
Which predated the Chamber of Commerce, or was kind of a chamber?
The Chamber of Commerce was first,
okay.
And then they had an interlocking membership. But the Climate Club was put into place in 1922 solely to promote Tucson, the climate, come out here.
A booster, kind of a tourism
exclusive
booster
club, of politics.
Kind of like an early visit Tucson that we have right now.
Right.
Yes.
And they had a paid magazine ad campaign. You would clip the coupon. You would get a booklet back promoting. And they would follow you. They would track you all the way through to, I mean, they even knew if you had purchased a home and decided to live here.
Wow.
I mean, that was how. And it was a function of their advertising agency that did this. But this was expensive. And so on the eve of the Second World War, 1939, 1940, Roy Drachman, who's then the president of the Climate Club, decides they're going to create viral photographs that come to the attention of magazine and newspaper editors. So they'll just do these photographs themselves without the expense of an ad agency. I mean, they would go into paid advertising sometimes, but this viral, they didn't use the word viral, but that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so it came to somebody, probably Drachman, or maybe it was Charles Herbert, the Western Ways photographer that was a buddy of Drachman's, to cut off the growth tips of a saguaro and attach them to a woman's bathing suit.
Oh, my God.
So in other words, it would be a cactus sunsuit. They never described it as a cactus bikini. They called it a cactus sunsuit. And this went viral. And it went into some 300 newspapers across the U.S. and across the globe. And then it was finally picked up a year later by Life magazine. And, of course, Life at that time was, you know, tens of thousands of circulation, with pass-through circulation. It was just amazing. The problem was that it was kind of off-putting. The headline that was given to the photo when it appeared in the papers was "Touch Me Not." You know, and I think even Drachman might have admitted that was not the best thing.
Right.
But nevertheless, this idea of the cactus gag photograph, where you're wearing parts of the plant, you know, that had value. And they decided, well, maybe we're not going to cut the plants up to wear them, but we'll get close to them. We'll sit on them.
Yeah, I have this image in front of me of a beautiful model.
Right, and she's seated on a barrel cactus.
Seated on a barrel cactus in a bathing suit.
Well, it's padded.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Or it's sawed off and it's just put a plank on it. But they posed high school models in bathing suits standing on the drooping arms of these plants out at Saguaro East, what was then Saguaro National Monument. But it became the kind of thing where, you know, you can't get close enough to the plant. I mean, they realized what an exceptional thing they have, and that became the method with which they publicized Tucson and Southern Arizona. By standing, literally standing. I mean, hence the title of the book, In the Arms of Saguaros.
Yeah. Saguaro, the image and the icon is still strong today.
Yeah. I mean, you see it, I don't know, one of my favorite photos is a woman wearing a Fashion Week Prada skirt that has a kind of a Southwestern motif to it. I mean, the saguaro really is having a moment now. I mean, and you can see it anywhere. I mean, which sort of leads to the confusion about where the habitat actually is, which I think is maybe in a kind of strange way, that's its power, because it's migrated from its natural habitat here in the Sonoran Desert to an imaginary habitat that's in your head. I mean, it's on the American roadside in neon signs from Texas to Florida to Massachusetts. But that's what its power is. It's in the imagination as a symbol of the Southwest, if not the entirety of the West.
Was there ever a time where there was pushback not to use the saguaro as a symbol, and how did that begin to change?
Well, as early as its first appearance in World's Fairs, you know, there were Arizona territorial visitors who complained, you know, wrote letters to the editor like, "You missed, you know, how dare you exhibit something that suggests the poverty of our soil? You should have erected a statue of abundance with the horn of plenty in each hand, you know, instead of this withered cactus." And, you know, and the saguaro takes a while before it moves from the margins when it's mentioned at all in, you know, land sales, you know, propaganda put out by the railroads, to the center of the frame, which is mostly a function of guest ranch owners adopting it and using it as a symbol. But I mean, if any confirmation were needed as to just what kind of reaction, opposition to it, you look at the state seal, which is still in use today, which has an irrigation reservoir, a field, a miner with a pickaxe, a steer representing cattle, and there's no saguaro. There's no cactus of any kind. So,
well, we hope the saguaro will be around for a long time, but we don't know about how climate change is going to affect it. There's been some research about the flowering of the plant, which normally occurs April and May into early June, but it's been flowering at some really strange times of the year over the past year. And some of that may have to do, Dr. Bird, with, after all, last year was, while this was a great year for rain, last year was horrible.
It was terrible.
It was terrible. So maybe things are starting to look better for the saguaro. I know that they sure look fat and happy. What would you like, Dr. Bird, the listener who gets the book, and by the way, where is the book available, and what would you like for them to take away from the experience?
Well, it's available, the PDF of it may be downloaded for free
as
a contribution to knowledge, with a capital K,
but
it may also be purchased from the university bookstore on campus, and I believe there's a link that, you know, they can have it sent to you if you can't go down there physically and pick it up. But
the takeaway message, what
would you like? The takeaway message would be that the saguaro developed this image as a kind of a fun in the sun, a sales message. And this is pretty much where we are today in fashion and sculpture, art, those kinds of things. But the book ends with, you know, people touching very gingerly the plant. And when I wrote about that, how, you know, we touch, it's really the plants are touching us. That's the takeaway message.
And for those that think you can determine the age of a saguaro by how many arms it has, kind of an old wives' tale.
Yes. I mean, if it has arms, it's an old plant,
yes,
for sure.
And they typically will live a couple hundred years.
Correct.
Well, we hope they're around for a long time. And Dr. Bird, thank you very much. Really great work with this project.
You're so kind, Bill. Thank you so
Thanks
much.
A lot. Dr. Larry Bird with us, the name of the book, In the Arms of Saguaros. That will do it today for the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Tom Fairbanks, my engineer producer, doing a great job as usual. On behalf of Dr. Bird, I am Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great afternoon. We've got Dave Ramsey and his very popular show on money coming up next on KVOI, Tucson's trusted source for local news and talk. Have a great afternoon.